This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hi, I'm Greg Watson, and welcome to this week's show of Property Matters, where we talk all things property here on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio. A little bit of a mixed bag today. We'll talk a little bit about the market in terms of the sales market and what's been happening, but lots and lots of tenant and landlord stories, words of warning for people, and some quite amazingly bad landlords, more so than tenants. I've also had some tenants who've quit a lease after an apartment hits almost 44 degrees Celsius. Is it Healthy Homes Gone Mad? So stay tuned for that one. First of all, we'll look at the sales market and what's been happening there a little bit. We have an article talking about the Wellington average property asking price, and that's risen nearly $95,000 in a year. Now, the asking price obviously is not the same as the sales price, but this is according to realestate.co.nz. So that's actually a 12.9% year-on-year rise, according to that data. So realestate.co.nz's May property report shows that the capital is one of six regions that recorded both month-on-month and year-on-year price increases. The average asking price in Wellington reached $828,531, and at the same time, new listings in Wellington dropped 32.1% compared to the same month last year, and that's a possible driver behind the price rise, of course. Across the country, the national average asking price remained steady during May, up a marginal 0.8% year-on-year and 1.4% month-on-month. Southland stood out, reaching an all-time high of $564,291, and that's the highest since records began 18 years ago. Probably not too much to report here. They do say that five regions have recorded a year-on-year stock decline. One of those is Manawatu Whanganui, and all 19 regions across the country reported month-on-month decreases in stock. So interesting stuff there, and that's actually going to lead on or to be a good segue into an article by Tony Alexander, the economist, and he's saying in this article on One Roof that a dream scenario for thousands of young buyers as investors sell, sell, sell. So this is an analysis here, so let's have a little look at what he has to say. He says, at the end of 2024, as consumers and businesses reacted extremely positively to the easing of monetary policy from August, there were some good readings in his surveys. In early December, a net 27% of agents said they were seeing more people at auctions, and a net 28% said they were seeing more people at open homes. Now a net 20% say fewer people are in the auction rooms, and a net 16% say few people are attending open homes. So similar declines have been recorded across the other measures, including the proportion of agents saying that buyers feel FOMO, a fear of missing out. Late last year, 19% of agents said there was FOMO, but now only 5% say that. So this is almost exactly where it was at start of 2023, before first home buyers began entering the market in large numbers to take advantage of lower prices, strong listings, little competition, and secure incomes. So are the first home buyers still out there? Well, yes, a net 29% of agents said they are seeing more first home buyers. The residential real estate market in New Zealand is being driven by young buyers. And what about investors? No. There are two aspects to the no. First, a net 4% of agents say they're seeing fewer investors looking to buy. At the end of last year, the reading was a positive 36% of agents who are seeing more investor buyers. Second, more investors want to sell what they already have, and this is the part of my equation most people have yet to catch up on. A net 24% of agents say they are seeing more investors trying to sell. A five-year average reading is just 4%. Why are investors selling? Well, the costs of running a rental business have jumped sharply, courtesy of big increases in council rates, insurance premiums, and maintenance expenses. Good tenants have become harder to find amidst a plethora of properties being offered for rent because the owner or vendor cannot sell them for the price that they want. Also, many of the people who heeded government advertising campaigns from the early 1990s to save and invest more to prepare for retirement want to sell to finance what is turning out to be a far more expensive retirement than expected because of the expense jumps just noted, alongside higher food and electricity prices. So is it all doom and gloom? Well, definitely not. This is almost exactly the environment tens, if not hundreds of thousands of young couples have been dreaming of since house prices started soaring in the 1990s. Listings are plentiful, mortgage rates are at or near cyclical lows, investors in net terms are leaving the market, the government is ensuring more development land and intensification zones are available, and there is little competition from net migration. The only missing element is job security, and history tells us that always returns. Assisted by unusually strong prices being received for our commodity exports, that security may start returning in the regions first. That is, the order of return of strength of the residential real estate market looks likely to be the regions, Christchurch, Auckland next year, and maybe Wellington the year after that. So, good time to buy, according to Tony Alexander in that article, saying that things are going well. Probably one last article here by Kelvin Davidson on oneroof.co.nz about the market. Where property values are taking off and where they are struggling. So the heading, or the subheading here, is plain vanilla month for property values in May. So the Cotality Home Value Index for May showed a 0.1% drop in the nationwide median value to $818,132. So they say it's clear the wider market is still struggling for direction, with some increases followed by drops or periods of no growth. This theme of conflicting forces has been around for a while now, with the boost of the lower mortgage rates dampened by the abundance of listings, a soft economy, and the lurking effects of debt-to-income ratio caps. After some big shifts in recent months, loan terms stabilised a bit in April, with 30% of new lending going out on floating rates, 39% fixed for 6 to 12 months, and 32% fixed for longer than 12 months. So that's a reasonably even split and suggests that most borrowers are keeping their options open, keen to lock in a bit of certainty with a longer fix, but also to keep some of their loan on floating in case market rates fall a bit. And the worst might be over for house builders. Last week's figures from Stats NZ showed a 2.6% rise in residential construction work over January to March, the first quarterly increase since 2022. Admittedly, that still leaves activity down by 25% from the peak, but upturns have to start somewhere, and there's certainly evidence that the number of new dwellings consented has stabilised. The natural lags between consent and completion always meant that work put in place figures would take longer to stop falling, but we might be there now. And to be fair, a sharp upturn might not start straight away, but the key point is this apparent floor for construction activity has arrived at a much higher level than in the past, meaning the risks of any housing shortages emerging are reduced too. This is another reason for caution about the medium-term pace of house price growth, especially if the government's strong push on housing supply policies can stick through the electoral cycle. So lower net migration is still weighing on the property market, and the first key data set to watch for this weekend is April's migration figures, he says, from Stats NZ. He said, it's worth noting that the annual net migration has stayed positive lately, but has nevertheless dropped below average, and this is another reason why the housing market remains subdued. So that's a bit of a roundup of the market there. Not a lot happening with house prices, as they tend to change there. We'll now move on to some bad tenant, bad landlord type stories, just usually as a word of warning with regards how people should be treated and how tenancies should take place. So this article was from the Nelson Mail and said, wandering livestock, pooing poultry and staring landlord lead to tenancy tribunal fine. This by Nina Hindmarsh. A staring landlord, a broken toilet, farm animals in the garden and defecating in the house, and a dog that killed a turkey. One Tasman tenancy turned into a comedy of rural horrors, landing the landlord a $1,500 fine. The landlord of a rural Richmond property, who was not named in the decision, was ordered on May 2 to pay their tenant compensation after Tenancy Tribunal found multiple breaches of the Residential Tenancies Act. And this included a failure to maintain essential amenities and repeated intrusions on the tenant's quiet enjoyment of the property. The dispute arose from a tenancy at 45 Lansdowne Road in Appleby, a nice area there, which ran from August 2024 to February 2025. According to the tribunal, which heard the case in April, the owner lived on the adjoining land and the two properties were divided by a wire fence. The issues began early in the tenancy when a toilet was reported broken, the tribunal said, and the landlord initially attempted repairs. But the issue persisted for about 10 weeks, during which time the second toilet was out of order. More serious were repeated breaches of privacy and property boundaries, which included the landlord and his family staring into the tenant's home and farm animals entering the property and house. The tribunal said that not long after tenants moved in, they discovered the landlord would, from time to time, stand at the wire fence and stare. Over Christmas, the landlord's family would also stand at the fence and stare at the tenant's premises. They raised the issue with the property manager, the rent shop, who spoke to the owner and the staring incidents reduced. Livestock, including turkeys, chickens and a goat, regularly crossed onto the tenant section, sometimes even entering the house, and this resulted in bird feces being left inside the house. The day after the tenants moved in, they told the property manager, who said they would speak to the owner and direct shade cloth to the fence. It was 2 months before the shade cloth was erected. The birds would come onto the tenant's land every day. The tribunal noted the shade cloth only had limited effect. Eventually, the tenant's dog killed one of the turkeys, which seems to have at least put a halt to the turkey problem. The landlord's goat also came through the fence on two occasions. The tenant returned the animal and informed the landlord, who responded that they should leave it there for a few days as it's good for the garden. The tenant kept pushing the goat back onto landlord's property. The owner eventually erected an electric fence, which put a stop to the goat's attempts. The tribunal said the property manager indicated that the concerns raised by the tenants were legitimate and had tried to talk the owner about the issues. However, they suspected the owner, whose second language was English, did not fully understand. It took the owner some 3 months to eventually stop the interruptions by his livestock. The tribunal found the landlord failed to act promptly, resulting in a continuing nature of interruptions, and awarded the tenants $800 in exemplary damages for breach of quiet enjoyment and $700 for loss of amenity. The tenant also experienced frequent internet outages, which were eventually traced to the landlord wiring their electric fence to the internet cable. My word, that's a new one, even for me. However, a claim was dismissed as there was insufficient evidence the tenant had raised the issue with the landlord or property manager. So, boy, if you're living next door to your tenants, be careful. You've got to give them that quiet enjoyment at the property. Here's an interesting one with regards, you could say, bad tenants. This article from the New Zealand Herald says, brothers convicted of cannabis growing at rented Sunny Nook property, but landlord not prosecuted. So two brothers had been convicted of cultivating cannabis at a rented property, but the landlord, who owned four other alleged grow houses, has escaped prosecution. Police raided the Auckland house rented by Te Hai Pine, excuse the pronunciation, and visited by his brother Knan Hoi Pine on September the 9th, 2022. Inside, they found a cannabis-growing operation with 115 plants at various stages of growth. There was a hydroponic irrigation system, extensive lighting, and the electricity meter had been bypassed to avoid any suspicion caused by excessive power usage. The police found 4.8 kilograms of dried cannabis heads stored in plastic bags in the ceiling space, and Fan was listed on the tenancy agreement as the occupant of the property and had paid a bond in the month before the police raid. Knan Pan was implicated after his vehicle was filmed on CCTV at Bunnings, being loaded with equipment that matched items found in the growing room. A neighbour said he saw the brothers' vehicles at the property regularly, and Tai Fan's personal effects were found there, along with both brothers' fingerprints. So after a jury trial, the Fan brothers were convicted of cultivating and possessing cannabis for supply, and they were sentenced to home detention. During their trial, the brothers tried to shift responsibility for the cannabis growing to other people associated with the property, including the landlord and the property manager, according to a Court of Appeal decision. Oh dear. The evidence addressed the fact that police found commercial cannabis growing operations in four other properties owned by the landlord, including a neighbouring property. So fair enough that they try and put it onto the landlord. But key parts of the evidence were ruled inadmissible. The judge who presided over their trial ruled key elements of this evidence were inadmissible. The brothers took their case to Court of Appeal, arguing the conviction should not stand because of a miscarriage of justice. The brothers said the landlord had two properties in Sunny Nook, two neighbouring properties in Glen Eden, and another property elsewhere in Auckland. All had been searched by police, four were found to contain active grow houses, and another had been set up to be one, but had no cannabis in it at the time it was raided. It just shows you what can go on. Just bypassing the power and setting up a growing operation there. And that's something which can happen. You can get insurance to cover that sort of thing if you're a landlord. Here's an interesting one. This one's from the New Zealand Herald, and this says, tenant quits lease after apartment hits almost 44 degrees Celsius and the bond refunded. A tenant says sweltering heat inside their apartment reached temperatures well into the 40s, ruining a laptop, killing pot plants, and requiring medicines to be stored in a car where it was cooler. Now the tenant has been allowed to move to break a year-long lease and to get their bond back a month after moving in. It comes after NZME reported concerns this year that tens of thousands of Auckland families would suffer in overheating terraced houses and vulnerable people could risk dying of heat stroke unless construction designs changed. In this instance, the tenant, whose name was suppressed after a tenancy tribunal hearing, said the excessive heat inside their one-bedroom, sixth-floor apartment was evident soon after moving in. The building in an undisclosed location was managed by a body corporate, but the landlord remained liable to the tenant under the rental agreement and by law. So on a day in March this year, the tenant recorded the temperature inside the east-facing unit at 43.6 degrees Celsius before midday. The next day, the mercury had risen to 38.5 degrees Celsius before 9 a.m, even with the living room open and after the air conditioning had been running, according to evidence presented to the tribunal. The tenant said it was difficult to sleep in such heat, pot plants didn't long last beyond a day, and that it was not safe storing a co-tenant's medication inside the apartment, so they left it in the car. The tenant said the heat had caused the battery in the laptop to expand, damaging the computer beyond repair. The tenant also said the windows in the apartment did not open wide enough to allow sufficient draft, but the landlord disagreed and suggested the tenants had not been using them properly. The landlord also took temperature readings in the living room with the curtains closed and then open. The afternoon temperatures were 26.4 degrees Celsius and 28.3 Celsius were high, the tribunal said, but not as high as those recorded by the tenant. The landlord also produced a Healthy Home Standards report showing that the unit complied with the applicable ventilation requirements. In a recently released decision, the tribunal ordered the $2,440 bond to be returned to the tenant plus partial reimbursement of electricity charges it cost to run the air conditioning over and above the standard power charges. The tenant was surprised to receive two invoices totaling $96 to cover the cost of running the heat pump and air conditioning unit while they lived there. However, the landlord said that explained at start of tenancy that the power supplied to the air conditioning unit, which was based on usage only, was controlled by the body corporate and invoiced separately. The tenant paid the invoices but claimed there was insufficient evidence to support the calculation of the charges or prove the usage claimed was exclusively attributable to themselves. The landlord produced spreadsheets provided by a body corporate which they claimed set out how the charges were calculated. So what was the outcome on this one? It's probably, I don't know if they've actually done anything apart from, like I say, released the bond, a little bit of reimbursement of electricity charges and released them from the tenancy. So the agreement was reached by the sounds of things, maybe at the time of the tenant and landlord to end earlier, which they did. So just a note from the New Zealand Property Investors Federation, which told NZME that investors should do due diligence on any property they buy, especially in light of recent media coverage about hot townhouses. Advocacy manager Matt Ball said there was nothing in the tribunal's decision or in general to say that new townhouses would not make a good investment. He said there were also opportunities for investors willing to do any necessary remedial work, such as installing ventilation or air conditioning. So that does sound extraordinarily uncomfortable. Personally, I wouldn't be able to handle that sort of heat inside at all. But if it's not heat that you want, if you want a bit of cold, here's a story by Hamish McNally on Stuff. It says, Otago students encounter mould, rubbish and a landlord who won't stay away. So the first year of flatting ended before it began for three Otago students after they discovered their flat covered in mould, foliage and rubbish. Zoe Ekoff, a second-year student at the University of Otago, never got to spend a single night in the Queen Street flat she rented with two male friends. We never moved in. We never even got offered keys, the 19-year-old who signed the lease for the flat back in September said. That lease began on January the 1st, with the trio paying $624 a week and with plans to move in February. And there are plenty of accompanying pictures to go with this article on stuff. Ekoff said that when they first signed the property late last year, three young men rented the property and I thought they were a bit messy, but she has obligations to make sure it's clean before I move in. But that didn't happen. Instead, the trio found a flat affected by black mould, overflowing in broken gutters, out-of-control foliage and rubbish littered throughout the property. The landlord, Karen Brown of Man Ook Holdings 2007 Limited, was repeatedly spotted on the property at the start of a tenancy, with installed security cameras capturing her entering 84 times over an 11-day period. That same landlord made national headlines in 2019 after abuse of females became a cover story for the student magazine Critic. That's right, I do recall that now. The cover of the magazine showed an email from Brown urging the student magazine to remove your filthy, stinking, lying, B-word, whining, story. I've tried to take out the swear words, referring to the Critic story that detailed a 2018 tenancy tribunal decision. A person was later captured on CCTV removing copies of that edition of Critic from campus, which Brown later denied when contacted by staff. Frustrated with Brown's continual visits to the property they were renting, Ekoff and her flatmates, who were yet to have a rental inspection, decided to issue her with a trespass notice, which she really didn't like. By the way, just for those of you who are interested, you cannot trespass a landlord from their own property. That's obviously upset her, and that led to a standoff between landlord and tenants, who were supported by their Dunedin-based families on February the 4th. It was a weird standoff, Ekoff said. The confrontation was noted in a tenancy tribunal hearing where the tenants sought the tenancy to be cleared invalid due to the state of the flat. The tribunal found that the landlord interfered with the reasonable peace, comfort and privacy of tenants. The subsequent actions of both parties led to a rapidly escalating dispute which resulted in applications to the tribunal, the decision noted. It found the landlord breached her obligations about the state of the flat and healthy homes, in particular overgrown gardens, full gutters, moisture damage, peeling paint and mould. The supplied photographs supported that the premises were not reasonably clean and tidy at the start of the tenancy. So it's I'm just looking at the photos here on stuff, it's amazing. So the evidence, in terms of amazingly bad. So the evidence also supported that landlord entered the flat without consent of notice or notice in January. The tribunal awarded compensation of over $3,500, being 40 days rent for the period the tenants did not have access to the flat. The experienced landlord turned a blind eye to their responsibilities, the tribunal said. Some people just should not be landlords. In effect, the landlord took advantage of a lack of knowledge of the tenants who had not previously rented premises by not having premises ready and available at the start of the tenancy. Exemplary damages of $2,000 was awarded to the tenants, with the tribunal noting that landlords should not ignore the rights of the tenants. After the rent arrears were deducted, the tenants were awarded over $4,000, with that amount credited towards their weekly rent of $624, equivalent of 6 weeks. The flat had since been tenanted by other flatmates, while Ekoff and her two friends had all returned home to live with their parents. Brown, when contacted, did not hold back, saying that Ekoff's claims were disgusting. She is very vindictive. Brown claimed the pictures of the flat were at least 2 years old. Brown maintained she cleaned the property before the start of tenancy. It was cleaned up before the date she said she wanted to move in. She told Stuff she'd have no issue residing in the flat. So Ekoff told Stuff, students shouldn't have to cross-examine their landlords and go through this whole tribunal process just to live in a healthy flat that's not going to get them sick for a whole year. The system, I feel, really sets students up for failure. So this month, the Ministry of Business, Innovation, Employment's Tenancy, Compliant and Investigations team were in Dunedin to check whether landlords were meeting their legal obligations under the Residential Tenancies Act 1986. A common theme of the dozens of properties inspected was that almost all tenants experienced properties straight away. That included landlords not ensuring their properties were up to standard at the commencement of the tenancy. So quite incredible there with regards to the situations. Here's one if you're a tenant, which would be a little bit on the strange side. Finally, for today, tenants catch landlord on camera in their living room. Holidaying tenants discovered their landlady had entered their home without permission after they caught her on camera. landlord Geeta Jikashandis told a tenancy tribunal hearing that she had entered the Newtown Wellington home to check if her tenants were still living there. They'd given their notice a week earlier. However, tribunal adjudicator Kristen Collar was not persuaded. The landlord did not stand at the door and observe a partly packed house. She entered and was inside the living area for about 20 seconds. Seems most likely to me that the landlord acted intentionally and took advantage because the tenants were away. And it wasn't the first issue with the tenancy, which began in March 2024 and ended in January. Contrary to the law, Jikashandis did not lodge the tenant's bond. Her son, who helped manage the tenancy, told the tribunal he forgot to do it. Collar said that was not good enough and deemed it an unlawful act. Jikashandis also failed to provide a healthy homes agreement. Her son said he was unaware that was required, but Collar was not convinced. She said the agreement was part of a standard tenancy contract and it was unlikely Jikashandis had seen the document but missed those two pages. The landlord had also failed to provide heating for the property, which a tenant said was very cold. The tenants brought a heater, but as soon as they turned it off, the room became cold immediately due to drafts, with a large gap under the front door and three windows which did not close properly. Again, some people just shouldn't be landlords. This is terrible. Jikashandis' son told the tribunal he was unaware of the requirement for heating and of the drafts. And again, Collar found this unlikely, given there were text messages between parties discussing the drafts. It was a landlord's responsibility to adhere to the law, Collar said. It is in the tenant's interest that houses can be heated, and there is public interest the landlord is penalised for the breaches. The tenants also claimed for breach of quiet enjoyment based on what they alleged were hostile text messages, a lack of repairs and ongoing maintenance of the house exterior. Collar found these were not proved, however the unlawful entry was, since it was caught on camera. It seems most likely to me the landlord acted intentionally and took advantage because the tenants were away, she said. The effect for the tenants was an immediate loss of trust. They were scared. This had happened before. It is in the tenants' interest that landlords respect their privacy, Collar said. So tenants were awarded $3,677, including, and this is interesting, $2,400 for the heating and drafts issue, $500 for failing to lodge their bond, $250 for failing to provide a healthy homes agreement, and $500 for unlawful entry. So it's really important to be obeying the rules and providing a house that is healthy and safe. So that's all we have time for this week here on Property Matters. I'm Greg Watson. Thank you to the team at MPR for editing this show and putting it together. And also, you can find the show wherever all good podcasts are found. Just search for Property Matters and Greg Watson. Great having your company. We'll talk again in a week's time.
If you enjoy this MPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.